My area will cover on the items I'll discuss on will be on digital forensics, because before we discuss anti-forensics, we need to discuss to understand what is the forensics, the techniques used, the methods and the procedures that are in use. And then the other item that will be I'll be discussing will be the anti-forensics itself, the challenges faced by forensics experts, and then at the tail end is the anti-forensic methods and the techniques. So for a start, we'll say what is the meaning of computer forensics. And this is very important because I was in a group chat for techies some few days ago, and somebody shared one of the tools, autopsy. And one of the participants was surprised, like, what is autopsy? They meant the autopsy, the one that's meant for medical process that is done on the cadavers by the doctors. I mean by forensics that are used for collection and analysis and presentation of non-refutable evidences in a court of law. The main aim is a forensic activity is to protect over aggression or criminality really occurred. And the evidence you're producing should be non-refutable evidence in a court of law. Some of the forensic steps that are usually followed include the concept that are usually known as the 3 S. These include acquisition of the evidence, thereafter authentication and analysis of the evidence. We had a session by somebody present a case in a court of law. That is where the evidence that you are now producing should be non-refutable. Are we together, Fred? Am I hearable? Audible?
Yes,
you're audible.
We can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
If you could avoid the moving.
You are moving your
Pardon?
Head. You are moving.
Yes,
your...
you can avoid moving your head.
Yeah, you are moving your head. I don't know.
Oh, I'm still.
Your head is aching.
I don't. The camera is working.
No, it's working. It's okay. Working pretty well. Perfect.
So okay. It's good to share the screen, but it's unfeasible.
No, just talk. Okay,
thank you for that.
Don't worry.
Okay, so the other item for consideration is the anti-forensics itself. And the definition for anti-forensic is it is usually a collection of tools that are used by the criminals to frustrate the justice process. You frustrate the forensic tools and frustrate the investigator and frustrate the investigation process, so that to delay the process or to completely scuttle the process of forensics work. So some of the, according to Rogers, there are some concepts that are being followed in terms of the anti-forensics. Some have classified them either as data hiding, artifact wiping, trailing or obfuscation, and attacks against the process and the tools. The attacks on the against the process and the tools will come at the tail end of this presentation. But now the other concept that you surely look into in terms of anti-forensics, actually the destruction of evidence by the whoever who has done the heinous activity, which is contrary to what is expected to do, hiding the evidence, manipulating the systems, or prevention, the recreation of the evidence. For example, in my experience as an IT guy, I've had two instances of they delete the data in the database itself, in the live system. So on contacting the head of the IT, who was the IT manager back then, they said they had some backup files stored somewhere in a certain computer. But by the time the team tried to retrieve the data from that computer, the data had already been deleted. The backup file had already been deleted. So that's a criminal offense whereby these guys now are really trying to cover up their tracks to defeat a justice, so that you cannot recreate what had really happened. And most of these events, even though it is a collusion between external, but there is an element of the internal guy. Because who could have known that these backups are stored in a specific computer, in a specific room, and maybe in a specific folder? So those are some of the challenges. What is the main aim of these guys, the anti-forensics team? Their main aim is to irritate and discourage the forensic examiners through their techniques and tools. Some of these now techniques and tools include the manipulation of the data, deletion, wiping, destruction of evidence, among others. So there are some goals that have been, in addition to what we had identified earlier by the various authors and the guys who have been in the forensics field. Some of the major four goals for anti-forensics guys is that they avoid detection, disrupting the collection of information, increasing the time that an examiner needs to spend on a case, and casting doubt on a forensic report or testimony. In terms of the most advanced method is avoiding detection, whereby if you have maybe somebody trying to intrude on your firewall, there are some ways or there are some scripts that can be written to bypass so that the firewall cannot detect this kind of traffic. The other thing is the disruption of the we have common cases, like you can talk even of the in Kenya, common one like the NYS1 case. It has been ongoing in court for a very long time. Still we have NYS season 2. We have some other cases. So these cases have really dragged on for a very long time because of the anti-forensic techniques deployed by the suspect. So they do prolong the process of acquisition of evidence. They try as much as possible to discredit the process. And if they are not able to discredit the process, they discredit the tools. So say that by the time you are presenting your case in a court of law as a forensic expert, they are really trying to cast a doubt, because some of these cases, they need to be beyond reasonable doubt, so that you can, the prosecutors can gain a conviction. But if these guys manage to cast some doubt on these tools or on the process, then the likelihood of the case being thrown out is very high. Any question, Fred?
For me, continue. We are learning.
Okay, so far. Yeah, we are learning. Okay.
Yes.
Very good. So the major challenges, the forensic challenges that the the experts usually face. This usually comes now in terms of the technologies. All of us as IT guys, we know there are several OSs in the field currently, and you cannot learn all of them. But the most important thing is at least you have some basic or foundational knowledge so that whenever you encounter a case, you are able to find your way through the systems that are in place. But most of the forensic tools, they are they are Linux based. So at least having basic knowledge or advanced knowledge in terms of the Linux environment will be a plus for you if you are a forensics person. So you might have, in a few years time, maybe guys who are still doing the DOS, running the commands. Then we came to Windows platforms, Windows 7, 8, 10. You might encounter right now a case that was in a Windows 8.1 or Windows NT some years back. So trying to restructure that evidence to suit the current tools will really make it a challenge for when you are trying to reconstruct your case. The other major thing is the criminals are really, they are becoming smarter by the day. And they are really trying so hard to wipe their tracks. So the experts, forensic guys, really need to be ahead of their game or at par with the criminals so that you are able to catch them on their tracks. The moment you nap a little bit, then you are left behind and you cannot catch up with them. The other major challenge is on the data analysis. We have tools that maybe when you are in a field collecting, maybe you are imaging or you want to search for a certain data. You can use a keyword to search, maybe a payroll file was altered. Then some tools have capability to search you want to image that hard disk or that computer, whatever you have seized in the scene. So some tools can help you really identify the exact location or the most important crucial things you need to capture. But again, there are a lot of, nowadays you can find a flash disk that is storing 1 terabyte of data. That is the biggest challenge because of the large volumes of data being stored in some of these portable devices. You're finding laptops which are 2 terabytes, okay? So really trying to search through the device and locate what you are looking for is a very big challenge for the forensics guys. And that's where the anti-forensics teams have really succeeded. One thing they can do is they can mask a file in a heap of data, maybe videos, movies, maybe songs, to really make your work a little bit harder or very hard, so that they achieve their aim, which we had said earlier on, their main target was to avoid detection or disrupting the collection of information, or increase the time that a forensic expert will take in retrieving and analyzing the data. So these large volumes of data are really a very big challenge. And one thing we need to know is that the forensic tools are not 100% certain. Maybe FTK or autopsy or sleuth kits, it depends on the circumstances and scenarios. You might choose one tool for a certain purpose and another tool for a certain purpose. So these tools will not give you the same result. And that is why now these guys are able to discredit the tools. Another item I forgot to mention earlier on is the reproduction of the process. When you are collecting evidence from a scene, either maybe laptops or computers, the process you are using to produce should reproduce the same results if another person was to undertake the process. That will make the case more watertight. So that if two forensic experts were to extract information from the same device, in order to avoid the discrediting of the tools or the process, the process should be in a manner that it can be reproduced. I hope that is very clear. So here are the most common anti-forensic methods: obfuscation and data encryption, data deletion and physical destruction, analysis prevention, and the other thing is online anonymity. Obfuscation and data encryption, there have been, if you were to study on the encryption methodologies, actually they were meant to safeguard the transfer of information from one source to the other, to make at least authenticity of the information that can be proven. But now it has become a safe haven for criminals to hide their information, so that they commit a heinous act or they commit a crime using the digital devices. And then by use of the encryption methodologies, they are able to defeat justice or frustrate the forensic experts. Encryption is an investigator's nightmare. If I may remind you, there was a very highly publicized case that was between Apple computers and the FBI. This was after the shooting of the students in, I cannot recall the state. So at the scene of crime, a mobile device was recovered. The mobile phone was an Apple phone, but the FBI guys were not able to extract information from the device because of the encryption methodology that had been employed by the company developing the device. And Apple were very adamant, despite orders from the court, for them that they should help the FBI to extract information from the device. They could not. And really, FBI were frustrated. Maybe we can, our team can guide us, especially from the security guys. FBI were really helped by the guys from Israel to extract the information from that Apple device. And the tool most likely that was used was Cellebrite. That's the word in the street. So for any forensic guy, the most daunting task is when they come a device that has been encrypted. Some of the basic, like even the BitLocker by Windows, is a very serious encryption tool. But it depends, they can be broken down by the anti-forensic devices like FTK, Autopsy, FluidKit, or whatever it is that you choose for the purpose. Some of the commonly used tools now, the one I've mentioned is BitLocker for Windows. There is something called Cryptcha. There is a tool called TrueCrypt. It allows a second encryption. You do an encryption in the first phase, and then you do a second encryption on the file. Just imagine the time an investigator will have trying to decrypt that device. So you first have to find which methodology was used in encrypting the device. Then thereafter, try to break it using all the most possible available tools. The other very basic is the changing the file extensions. Maybe a file was a PDF or a PPT, but a criminal will change that the extension of that file to make it a .exe. So without using the most advanced and the forensic tools for retrieving the data, it will be very hard to really tell that, for the tool to tell that this actually is not an executable file, but it is a Word document or an image. The other thing that can be used is hiding and unhiding documents from a visible view of a user. You could create a file on a desktop, right click, properties, hide selected folder. So if you are just scanning through the desktop or the documents or the C or drive D, with a human eye, you might not really be possible. It might not be possible for you to really find the file you are looking for. It could be a payroll file. It could be a financial documents file. It could be an accounts payable file you are looking for. So those are some of the basic things that a forensics guy should be enabled to be aware about, to be able to beat the anti-forensics technologies and techniques in use. The other one is steganography. This is an anti-forensic technique that involves hiding files, either in audio files or images or MP3, whatever it is. So steganography, a criminal will hide their files in a certain device. I had one here called OpenStego, but I cannot really demonstrate because of the inability to share the screen. So you use this OpenStego file or OpenStego tool to hide some information. So maybe when you are sending it to wherever it is going to, if somebody was to intercept it, they'll just see it as an image or an audio file. So without using a tool to decrypt it, there's a process called steganalysis, which is the detection of steganography. So without having a steganalysis tool, if you come across such an image, you will not be able really to tell what is it. But now in that process, the criminal would have succeeded in conveying their information from one end to the another. So that's those are some of the items or techniques that falls under obfuscation and encryption of data. The next I'll go is on data deletion and physical destruction. The most common one and very effective and highly, even though it is not highly used, is called disk degaussing. DEGAUSSING. I'll share the slides at the end of this. So there is a device called C91 Max. It is a virtual, it's a very powerful, it's a manual hard drive decoder designed to fully to securely wipe the data in a computer hard drive and even in tapes. So if a criminal was to access this device, then the work of a forensic expert will be, I cannot tell. Yeah, because the data has been fully wiped out and you won't be able to reconstruct it. That makes it a bit, it makes your work a daunting task, and then the forensics team will have succeeded because their main aim is to hide evidence, delay the process, or really scuttle the process in full. So disk decoding is very, very effective method used to ensure that data has been fully wiped out completely. But the only advantage we have is that the cost of acquiring the device is very prohibitive. So the common criminals or guys cannot really get hold of the device for the purpose of erasure or covering their criminal tracks. Physical destruction, there's nothing much you can do about it. If somebody was to burn a hard disk or hit it with a hammer, that's full physical destruction. And that's a nightmare for a forensics person when trying to recover those evidences of such a kind of destruction. Now, the other method usually used is the online anonymity. And this comes in when we use of the tunneling proxy servers and the Tor browsers. Even though there is a project called Breaking the Tor right now, whereby they're really trying to unmask the guys who are in the darknet or the dark web, whereby they've really succeeded in masking their identity by really bouncing the traffic from one place to another and really trying to use advanced techniques to make sure that the evidence cannot be retraced or they cannot be traced. The most basic one is private browsing. If you open your browser and then you browse in a private window. So the session is live or active as soon as you are active. The moment you end the session, that data is wiped. So you will need more advanced technologies to really retrieve or recover those sessions. End-to-end encryption really plays another part of it. Let's say, for example, mailing clients like ProtonMail. And because of the jurisdiction issues, you might not be in a position to recover those emails, even if such an email device or such an email technology was used to perform an illegal activity. In the Amazon cloud right now, acquiring an instance is a visit, 1,000 Kenyan shillings, that's how many, like $100. You have acquired an instance of a virtual environment in an Amazon cloud. You used to perform your whatever it is. At the destruction of that instance, where will you retrieve the information? So some of those advanced techniques can really aid in covering up the tracks of the criminals. The other thing is the whereby systems admins or the criminals, wherever they are able to edit the system logs so that the system is not storing logs for certain activities in the crew policies, especially the Active Directory for Windows. So this way, the system will not be able to log the sites that have been visited by that user. They can even mask their IP addresses. So the bottom line of all this is to make the forensics examination process wider and longer, and to some extent discredit the process. So those are some of the techniques being used, especially in terms of online anonymity. Then there is some more advanced techniques called MACE, M-A-C-E, which is a timestamp modification. For every device, for every file in a computer, it has something called a MACE. MACE really records the time the device, the file was created, the time the file was modified, the time the file was created, and all those things. That's the functions of the MACE. So there are some forensic packages that read those values when you're really trying to restructure a scene of a crime. So if you get an advanced criminal who is able to alter the MACE of a file, change the creation date, so the extraction tools that you will be using will not be able to know that the timestamp were really modified. So the tool will extract the timestamps as they are, the way they were modified by the criminal. So for you, you will really have a very hard task trying to prove. Maybe a date is 1st of April. April 2020, but time that she produced or evidences are to be produced in a court of law. Then the contradicting dates will really cast doubts on your own. On the report, the advanced technique, serious anti-forensic techniques. Technique called hash collision encryption, that whatever item is being reproduced in the end or in the other end, let's say I'm sending a file to Alice. By use of encryption, I have the encryption key that we've shared with Alice, which she has a decryption key. So the purpose of encryption is to secure the communication so that the criminals or anybody cannot intercept the communication in between. But now a new technology called hash collision is really casting doubt on the process of file encryption. If you encrypt a file, a folder A, the hash function should give you maybe an X. That is the encryption of folder A. You encrypt folder B, the hash function should be Y. But now, by use of the hash collision technology, encrypting folder A is able to give you two hash functions. The output from the same folder, that is A giving you Y and A giving you X. So that's the mode of anti-forensics that really will make your forensics journey very complicated, and really it will aid in casting doubts in the forensics report that you've generated. It will also cast doubts on the tools that are being used to generate those reports. Because the moment somebody can prove that from this file, I'm able to generate two these different hash functions or hash values, the output of the hashing or encryption, then whoever will be making a judgment will have some doubts, like which item now or which file or which technology should I rely on in making my decision. So there are some of the advanced techniques used for anti-forensics purposes. The other thing is account hijacking. There are some bit computer accounts that are used to perform malicious activities. Maybe by use of keyloggers, you can capture the passwords or login credentials for several users in an organization. Thereafter, you run a script on the database. And Matthew, you need to understand that most criminals stay in a network for a very long time, mostly even half a year, which is around 200 days, 180 to 150 days, somebody is in your network, really trying to see and understand, making lateral movements until they are able to understand where and what are in a certain place. So the moment they've done this, they will be now, they make the Zombie account, and they'll be able to run a script and execute in the databases. So at the time of generating reports, as a forensics expert, you will find several user accounts were used to perform an activity in a manner that in the normal computer operating or in a normal user way, operating way, they are not able to perform those activities at a go. So this account hijacking and having some bit computer account will make your process of evidence production a bit tricky, and the criminals would have succeeded in fashion on the tool and maybe delaying the process, thus delaying the justice. Another major technology is archive image bombs. This is the use of self-destructing software after performing a certain activity. This is where the time bombs come in. You install a malware in a certain network, you steal information, then thereafter you cover your tracks. How do you do it? By using an image bomb or self-destructing applications. So these applications, they are really able to cover up their tracks, say that the forensics guy cannot be able to really reconstruct what really happened. So those are some of the techniques really being used. Disabling logs, I had already mentioned that one in the about the policies and the directory whereby the logs are being disabled. So the challenge of this one is the tools or the audit software cannot really tell that such and such a policy was disabled, and that as the system was not able to capture certain events, that it is really impossible to reconstruct the missing data. So those are some of the major challenges being being encountered, and the tools being used by the criminals for anti-forensic purposes. that's really the end of my presentation, not unless there are some questions. It is a bit very hard to present when you are not really seeing the people, so that you can be able to judge on their facial expression. Fred, are you still there?
Yes.
Yes, dear Ruben.
I am.
That might be my presentation, guys. I hope. Yes.
That was so good.
So let me also activate my camera so that people can be able to see who is speaking. Thank you very much, Ruben, for taking that time to be able to really share with us. So we give a few minutes, anyone with a question, and I start off that with this question. Now that we have the SSD technology for the hard drives, and where it becomes somehow hard if data is deleted from an SSD drive. So how do you go around that? And where do you find, where is the balance between, because somehow someone would argue anti-forensics might be maybe criminal in nature or something like that. But at what point can anti-forensics be used maybe legally or something like that? But in this case, in an environment where you have SSD, what are you supposed to do?
Okay. Thank you, Fred, for that question. From my research and own observation, I thought the best tool that can be used is to have a way of replicating. You know, right now we know where the logs for system activities and privilege activities are being stored. So the next thing is maybe by use of machine learning, you develop an application that is capable of replicating those logs in a location that cannot be really destroyed, and you cannot really have it in view of the common systems admins. It should be a little bit a hidden solution that can really help you. It's like a monitoring tool, and now you will not be really, you cannot really capture everything, but you will identify specific items to capture and to store them in a different location. But most probably is log files, maybe for creation, deletion, modification of users, and such a kind of a things if you are working in an Active Directory environment. I've seen a question by Keter. The MESC is, it's not M-E-E-C, it is M-A-C-E, which is modification, access, creation, of the event logs or files in a system. Fred, any other question?
Guys, ask a question before we sit down to eat some githeri.
Okay, so Pascal, so I wanted to ask, so we've already agreed all you've ascertained that and forensics is illegal.
Okay, Pascal.
Yes.
We cannot say anti-forensics is illegal per se, because I mentioned earlier on that encryption is a way to authenticate, or the three A's, authentication, authorization, and maybe verification of transmission of information from one end to the other. But now, this authentication is now, apart from the good part of it, is becoming an anti-forensics tool. Case in point is when I mentioned the case of FBI and Apple. The encryption of your device, of your data in your phone, is good. But in case of a criminal activity, it is bad on the other hand. So it is a case that neither here nor there, because the encryption part of it is good, but now how they are being utilized is now making it anti-forensic. But had it been used for the good way, without really breaking the, what do I call, the rights of an individual, that's where now the encryption or these techniques have become now illegal.
Yes, because I was thinking, I don't know that Kenis is on, online, eh? Maybe Kenis could advise. Now, I assume that a case is happening right now. Someone is doing some forensic investigation and all that. And the person who is being investigated calls Pascal and tells Pascal, I want to take this hard disk, maybe encrypt it or do all these things so that you wipe out the data. Personally, I'm not aware that this person is being investigated. And now, during the process, now they realize that this person hired Pascal, who is a cybersecurity or security expert, to do this. Now, in the case of that case, because I've tampered with the evidence, probably, I don't know what would happen to me, because I was doing it maybe to get some money. I was doing it maybe to help. I'm not sure legally. I don't know if I can use online. Maybe share some light.
Kenneth, are you on?
Yeah, Ruben. That was well presented. I'm online.
Thank you.
Just a quick one. First of all, congratulations. It's a very intense presentation. And just to answer Pascal's question, there's this word they use in majorly during investigations. They talk of modus operandi. I mean, the mode of operation. So basically, sorry for that. Right? I have a young boy. He's also interested to see what's happening.
Mentor, no problem at all.
As they talk of the mode of operation, how is the matter handled, number one? Now, that will involve a lot of intensity on what really happened, the level complexity and all that. So to answer Pascal, what to do? Kidogo, end okay.
The challenges of working from
home. Sorry for that. So to answer Pascal's question, number one, whoever was hired, maybe to who has tampered the evidence. No, there's what you call intent. Was he aware while he was doing that and all that? So there's a lot of, there are so many ways how we look at this. So basically, you would say somebody was hired to tamper the evidence unless there was some intention to do so. But number two, it also the level of complexity that is involved with the anti-forensics. You know, when you begin doing some investigation and you find it's becoming too complex, that also shows you there was some level of complexity. Somebody who knew so much has taken a lot of time to do it, to hide the evidence and all that. So I wouldn't tell Pascal that it's a straightforward answer of a yes and a no, but basically the mode of operation will determine what happened, how it happened, and all that. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you for that.
There is a question here by Michael Felix. If a criminal used anti-forensics methods to conduct a crime, and you are called in to offer forensic services, and you find out that there is less information you can give, what would be the best advice to the organization? My friend Fred, are you still on?
I am here. I'm learning from the best. Eh? So maybe I can try to comment on that before I ask Peter to be able to also provide some knowledge on the same. So this is where you now, if is there any evidence that the person has used anti-forensics? What led you to know that the person has already used some anti-forensic tools? Are there any any logs, because some of these are tools, and tools will definitely produce some form of evidence. Apart from, let's say, focusing on one area, this is where you deploy skills on incident response, which now has something to do with threat hunting within the organization. So you do not maybe focus, let's say it's the database. They have used anti-forensics on the database. But how did they get into the database? Probably they moved laterally within the network. Probably they bypassed a firewall or a router. So those are some of the things that you do to try and do some correlations, which now will tell the customer, of course, as by the way it is, this person used this tool to hide themselves, but this is how they got in. Peter, maybe you can comment as well if you are not asleep, that is.
Good evening, everybody. Just to comment on this instance, first, I would want to identify, to make private to everybody that anti forensics has been taking place, and since the practice that is currently going on, how do you get to tell of an anti forensic activity from a scene of crime, let's say? Basically, by first, the absence of the information you're looking for, that may be something that can guide you to telling whether such an incident either ever took place and there is no data about it. Equally, you can you can trace. Soft and heavy litter to effect on the data that should be held at a certain or rather in that place. So how do we counter what is the best advice to give an organization when you notice that forensic methods or processes took place to limit or rather to lead to a crime? Basically, forensics is all about facts. You put it as it is. You don't buy time or buy data to convince the organization, rather to make them happier. They should be. Just give the facts as they are and leave it to the next team to decide on what happens next from whatever report you're going to prepare for them. Thank you. Ruben.
Ruben, are you there? Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Peter.
Hello.
For that. Thank you for that. Yeah, maybe you can add something because as we wind up because of time.
Yeah, just to interrupt a bit. Also, when Ruben was talking about forensic Rick. Tools. Are you getting me?
Hello.
Yes, you can get you. You can get you. Peter, continue talking.
Yes. When Ruben was talking about forensic tools, I want to know that he was speaking about the sleuth kit and autopsy is two different tools. I want to retaliate that autopsy is the sleuth kit. So it is called autopsy, the sleuth kit, and it's one of the best forensic tools that is open source. I believe if you want to do some good forensics as a learner, you can engage yourself with autopsy, and I bet you won't be disappointed. The reason why I'm saying this is because we had COTs, like commercial off-the-shelf tools, the ones you're supposed to acquire the licenses for you to use them, like FTK, NCASE, and so forth. So what happened is Encase was sold to OpenText, and the developers are not happy with the move. So most of them shipped come to Autopsy, and are working on Autopsy, and in the near future we're going to see more developments on the side of Autopsy, and we even having it being able to perform some of the forensic activities. Rather, we're having it performing better than even some of the license tools that we're having and available for sale on off the shelf. So for beginners and also for the experienced guys, I encourage you to interact with Autopsy. I also saw there was an online certification training for them that was free of charge during this time. So guys can see the link and also register and be able to follow up or pursue a few different things from it. So with that, from Autopsy, I beg to step aside and wait for somebody else to comment.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for that. And I think what we'll do, we'll take some of these questions and probably share them either in the group or maybe do a blog on them and try to respond. And because of, in the interest of time, considering that we are in our houses, I'll give Mr. Keniz as our chair to just comment on something, then as we wind up on the meeting. So thank you.
Thank you, Fred. And another round of applause for Ruben. That was intense, and I can see you did some research. Having said that, it's worth noting that time has come when, guys, we shift the gear. We took the discussions, you know, it began using WhatsApp and all that, and now we are introducing this platform. And now this was, again, should appeal to members, so that when your time comes to do this presentation, you should at least prepare adequately. That's number one. Number two, right now, if you are keenly watching and listening, you'll see so many trainings. You know? Working at home has become a reality, and we don't know how long this might take. But then as Kenya Cybersecurity and Forensic Association, this is an opportunity you should not let go. People are being... We are seeing a lot of malwares. We are seeing so many activities taking place in cybersecurity and basically cyber forensics, which again, members, this is the time we need to rise up to this occasion. Let's teach the public what is happening. In addition to that, let's also take this opportunity to, you know, escalate our activities to match the required standards as of now. I won't forget again to mention to pass my appreciation to all those people who have given their time to share knowledge. I know it's a bit trying. Most of this hour when people, you know, so many things happening. But then if you see somebody really creating time, you know, to share an idea, guys, we need to appreciate these people. But again, also those people who are yet to present, we really urge you to make a point. You know, charity begins at home. Share what you can, and the more you give, the more you'll also get to know, because basically nobody taught the first teacher. We are trying to do this so that we become expert at the end of the day. That's all for now, unless there's somebody who has a question and all that. But guys, I wish you a good night. Could there be any questions?
So maybe we can allow people maybe to send questions because of in the interest of time, and we really appreciate. So anytime that anyone has a presentation, you can talk to the leaders. You can talk to Mr. Kenny's. You can talk to me. You can talk to Rehema. You can talk to any leader within the association. Then we are going to set you up. So the platform can accommodate up to 150 people. So we are also going to, there's a way that we are going to integrate this with the learning platform so that when we issue the trainings online, people will be able also to attend live classroom sessions. And it's now the high time in the midst of this pandemic that we rise, as our chair is telling us. And also, when you are presenting, you can also let us see your face so that we put faces and know if you are still doing well. So we have also recorded the session. So we'll be sharing maybe in the group or through the emails so that you can be able to revisit the sessions. So from this desk, thank you very much for taking your time, for sacrifice. God bless you, and you know, protect your families from this virus. Have a good night, and thank you.
Good night. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you.